Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show.
I offer up myself to you, protected by your hand. My dreams and schemes and all I have surrendered to your plan. I know that I'm inadequate, I stumble and I fall, but still you always pick me up whenever I will call.
We humbly bow before you, we love to praise and adore you. We humbly bow before the throne. We give you all the glory, salvation is our story. We humbly bow before the throne.
I offer up myself to you, protected by your hand. My dreams and schemes and all I have is surrendered to your plan. I know that I'm inadequate, I stumble and I fall, still you always pick me up whenever I will call.
We humbly bow before you, we love to praise and adore you. We give you all the glory, salvation is our story. We humbly bow before the throne.
I need you by my side, forgive me for my pride. Please hear my cry before the throne.
Don, I'll pull you in a minute. There's a lot going on in the world right now with the United States withdrawal troops out of Syria. Turkey wants to accomplish a 10-mile buffer zone in northern Syria to protect themselves. Both the Syrian Kurds and the Turks have been victims of each other, casualties of war, and they are at each other's throats. Now that the U.S. has reduced forces, Assad has an open gateway to regain full control of the region, which will also empower Russia and Iran to achieve their strategic stronghold in the area and open the door back to ISIS. Russia is chumming up with Saudi Arabia, too, whom they claim to have a strategic oil interest in the region. This will cause an upheaval because it will put the Eastern Hemisphere at an advantage to substantially control the global oil market and keep the United States at bay. However, the United States has nuclear arsenal over 15 containers stored in the Turkish air bases, and the process to maintain relations is delicate. Also, Boris Johnson is not getting any headway in England regarding the Brexit decision, and it's up to the European Union to give them time to straighten things out. Whether they will or not, we don't know. And I'm also going to play a clip from Fareed Zakaria on how both George Bush Sr. and Jr. protected their administration from getting involved in other foreign governments to dig up dirt on political opponents. They didn't allow it. Karl Rove wanted to get involved with the NFC conferences overseas, and other people in the past have created those types of problems, digging up dirt on political opponents, but past administrations have not allowed it. One moment while I get into the podcast so I can play a short clip. Here we go.
We're there in the first place. The United States.
1 second, please. An ad popped up.
In the world, that the U.S. is unlikely to use military force to protect its interests. And that will invite more provocations. And I think the most likely invitee will be Iran. But it will also encourage those to make provocations thinking that the U.S. won't use any military force, when in some cases the U.S. will be forced to use military force. So I think there's an increased chance of provocations, and there's an increased chance of a very unwelcome and unwanted military conflict between the United States and some forces in the Middle East and perhaps even elsewhere in the world.
Steve Hadley, what do you think this does to U.S. relations with Turkey? After all, those are also now pretty bad. And Turkey, and some of this is the Turks, obviously, exercising their own kind of unilateralism. But they are a NATO ally. The United States has, what, 50 nuclear weapons housed in that airbase in Turkey. Are you worried about this relationship?
This has been a difficult relationship, really, for some time. And the strain of us being allied with the Syrian Kurds, who the Turks view as affiliated with the PKK, a terrorist group that has killed tens of thousands of Turks, it has been a problem for years. Ash Carter talked about that. I think the best that we can hope for out of this situation is that some kind of a deal gets worked out. The United States, I think, by getting a certain, achieving a period of ceasefire, maybe provide the context for a deal whereby Turkey is allowed to establish this security zone in the northern 10 miles of Syria. The Syrian troops come in and make sure it does not go further. There is some arrangement between the Syrian Kurds and the Assad regime that gives them some kind of autonomy and hopefully allows the United States to continue to do what it needs to do to ensure that ISIS does not come back.
Okay, we now have three co-hosts on the line, so Don was the only one to hear my intro to start out with. Steve Hadley, a former security advisor, was talking about how we have nuclear installments in Turkey. They're a NATO ally. We have to try to maintain some type of peaceful relationships with them. But Assad and Iran and other and Russia now have an advantage with our exit, and it might bring back more proliferations with ISIS. And also, the oil, the strategic oil interests in the region will now be controlled by the Eastern Hemisphere and will be competing in the global market to monitor those prices against Russia, Saudi Arabia, and Iran. With that, I'm going to pull in Don first since he called in first. One moment, please.
Hello.
Good evening, Don. Thank you for being patient for the intro.
No, I'm fine. Thank you very much for having the show.
And next we have John. John, are you at work tonight?
No, actually I'm at home enjoying the ambiance.
Great. I'll have full-scale interaction with you. And then we have Ben from Washington State. And by the way, you guys, I mentioned three topics this evening. The Brexit deal, the exit out of Syria. I also briefly mentioned some historical context about Bush, both Bush presidencies and Karl Rove, and how they didn't allow domestic politics to interfere with their foreign policy making. And also, Mr. Trudeau just won re-election in Canada. So who would like to go first based on my introduction?
I can go first. I mean, John.
Okay, Don. Hi, Ben, by the way. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Ben.
Hello. How are you? Hey, everybody.
Hi.
Yeah, so, this is going to be...
Don, we're on a 45-minute time crunch, so you can go ahead right away.
This is going to be a very, very interesting next couple of months. There's going to be all kinds of opinionating that's going to be coming out of the White House and the public and Wall Street. Wall Street seems impervious to all
this. Is opinionating a word?
Opinionating. It is a word, but not in the context that I used it in.
Okay, so go ahead. What's your main gist?
Yeah, no, as I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted by the lady host, what's happening is that people are going to be forming their opinions on what we're looking for as an American people. We are losing our morals and our values. And as I mentioned a couple shows ago, the deep state.
And what does that have to do with the three major topics of Canada's re-election, Brexit, and exit out of Syria?
We're pretty much, it means all of it. All of it comes in one umbrella concept of what the American ideal is going to look like in the future. We've got Trudeau, and he's got his own problems with the oil and his perception of blackface and all this other stuff. But basically, like you said in the second intro, that we're opening up the door for Iran, Assad, Putin to gain power in the perceived principal power head in the Middle East and all of Europe. So essentially, we're going into the American model is going into a cocoon-like state. So we're going to...
Can somebody respond to Don's comment, please?
We're not going to be the king of the world anymore.
Well, you know, in talking about this, it's a very interesting conversation, one that we could actually do for several months or certainly several hours for sure. It's a very rich history, and just to try to, like, put a quick cap on it, because I can go into depth with each Syria, Turkey, Armenia, the Kurds, that whole situation. But basically, Turkey is like the former Christian who flipped to Islam. Basically, they're a NATO ally. 99% of the population is Muslim, and they actually speak Turkish, which is kind of interesting. As they identify with their own nationalism, like we speak, you know, Turkish, and it's as old one of the oldest cultures. The oldest temple is the Göbekli Temple, henges, which are older than Stonehenge. It has a history of Troy.
Near Constantinople.
Yeah. Well, actually, glad you brought that up.
Which is now Istanbul.
Biblically, the first church of Antioch was settled there. And in 300 AD, Constantine chose a Byzantine as the new capital of New Rome. So kind of the backstory to that is, you know, you've got this place which has two of the seven wonders of the world. It's got this old great history. And then back and forth, you have the Roman-Persian Wars. In 300 to 700 AD, you've got Christians in the Catholic Church versus Muslims. You have the Ottoman Empire, which took that over for about 700 years. And the reason I'm mentioning this backstory, we get caught up in the last 5 years or 20 years or 50 years. We're talking hundreds of years, and this is what Trump talked about: endless wars.
Well, this is something I know about because my atheist professor said if Constantine hadn't converted, that Christianity would have never got off the ground. And Turkey used to be a Christian stronghold, and now they will barely tolerate any religion but Muslim.
99%. And then you have in Turkey, you had the Armenian genocide in 1915 for a couple of years there. And then Armenia was actually the first country to declare a Christian state as the official religion in 300 AD. So you've got, you know, this very strong Muslim influence just killing, wiping out people. And yet they're a NATO ally, so we use them strategically against the Russians. We put the encircling air base there, and we have all these nukes over there. Now, in between it, you've got Syria, which is kind of Israel's evil sister. And there, again, they're, you know, over 10,000 years of history. Saul.
But they don't really have a lot of geopolitical influence anymore. Armenia.
Well, they went through a whole bunch of stuff. They went through, just a little backstory, Canaan, you look big biblically, you know, Canaan land was there. It actually means, it means Dagon is Lord of Canaan. And they went through the Stone Age, the Bronze Age, the Iron Age, through the, around 2000 BC. And then suddenly Cyrus the Great came in there. Babylon took them over. Then Cyrus the Great came in there, and then Alexander the Great. And, you know, you have this back and forth. And Muhammad finally stepped in around 600 AD there and took it over. He ran things to about 1,000, 1,098, and then the Crusades came in. They took over Syria for 100 years, and then the Ottoman Empire came in, kicked them out. And this kind of rolled along until recent times. 1948, Syria invaded Palestine. And then 2 years later, or 10 years later, they signed a pact with the Soviet Union in 1956. And then Syria merged with Egypt. 2 years later, they merged and formed the United Arab Republic. And this has been rolling along. Syria, you know, kind of basically of funding and helping Palestine against Israel. And Syria became, they have Sharia codified courts. This is in 2011. And their human rights violations are among the worst in the world. We were kind of giving them some arms and things and kind of playing this game, but we're backing out, and Russia's really kind of
Let's not forget that Turkey's been under a lot of pressure with the large influx of refugees, and the YPG and the PKK, all those factions of the Kurds and the Turks have been at each other's throats alongside the border.
Syria signed a treaty of friendship with Russia in 1980, so that's kind of been their backstory. They partnered up with them. About 10% of the population are Kurds, and also same thing in Turkey. Islam is 87%, and there's about 10% Christians there. Their official language is Arabic, so this kind of ties into the Semitic languages, which Semitic is basically, you know, when someone says that's anti-Semitic, that's not anti-Jewish, that's the language is actually Syro-Arabian, or what they call Afro-Asiatic. I know Don will be happy about that one. But basically, so between those two countries, you've got Turkey.
Everything's Afro.
So you've got Turkey, you know, up there, and then you have Syria.
Let's just scale back the history lesson so Ben can talk too. But what's your overall point, Don?
So the overall point is the Kurds are the Turkey-Syrian sandwich. They're stuck right in the middle. They're kind of nationalists. They have their own language, Kurds. They don't want to, you know, they want their own little thing. They're mountain people. 98% of them are Muslim. So when we start saying, you know, our friends, the Kurds, well, they're Muslims. They're not Americans. They're not pro-democracy or any of our thing. All three factions are. They're Muslim, and they're fighting among each other, and it's just a kind of a power struggle for territory and, basically leveraging each other. And, you know, kind of Syria is kind of that they're squeezing each other over it, and these countries are basically the pathway up into from the Middle East to Europe, and that's where, you know, Greece and Italy are, and it's the old Roman Empire struggling against the Middle East, basically.
Ben, what's your take on all of this?
Well, I think it's funny to me that the Democrat Party is the warmonger party now. It's funny that I've been hearing from the same people who are supposed to be anti-war, the same party that's been protesting every war that we've been in ever since the 60s, and probably before that.
I think you're trying to politicize a very complex situation.
Okay,
because
do you want to know my opinion?
First of all, what people are afraid of is ISIS getting a stronghold in the area again.
Do you want to know my opinion, or do you want to narrate my opinion?
Go ahead and say it. I'll give you the full floor.
You want to narrate your opinion, Ben. You know that.
It just sounds like the way that you've introduced your opinion sounded slanted, but just be my guest and say what you want. Thank you for calling in.
The thing is, Jane, is that this, what you brought in for this program.
Okay, well, let him talk. Don't argue with me, Don. Let him talk.
You brought in three separate subjects, and they are all
different. That's because I studied them all. Yay me. Go ahead and let Ben talk.
But you were micromanaging his thoughts.
Don, you're going on mute till he's done. Go ahead, Ben.
Okay. I'm just saying that I'm hearing war, endless war, being pushed by the same voices who criticized Bush's war, which I did too. I don't think we had any right to go into Iraq and Afghanistan if it came out that we had insiders involved in 9/11 and possibly Saudi Arabia, and who knows, maybe the conspiratorial side, say Israel had a hand in it, and definitely we had insiders involved, but that was the reason why we went over there in the first place, to two countries that nobody even mentioned. And now we're over there.
Well, that's
close
a very good point, and I actually agree with you. If we hadn't gotten a foothold, I can see why we went to Afghanistan, even though it caused years of agony, but nothing but misery.
It's frustrating that nothing happened when Hillary was questioned about Benghazi. Nothing happened. She lied about it. Obama knew damn well what happened. Weapons were moved through Libya after they toppled the regime of Gaddafi. The weapons were moved through Libya into Syria, creating what was ISIS, what still is ISIS. And it took a regime change in our country.
Well, that's a good point, but do you care about the 250,000 Iraqis who died as opposed to four people in Egypt? I mean, not Egypt, but Libya?
Do
you care about the 250,000 citizens who are dead in Iraq as opposed to the four people dead in Syria?
Your
question is so
country.
Irrelevant. That your question is missing the mark altogether.
I just don't like the obsession with the Benghazi thing. It's annoying to me.
I don't care. I don't care. You asked my opinion. And I didn't allow you to narrate my opinion. I gave my opinion.
Here's the big
issue.
Well,
I'm countering your opinion with a question. You don't have to agree with me or say trivialize it. I'm just saying there's a lot bigger fish to fry in the Middle East than the four people who died in Libya. That might have been a big problem 5 years ago, but it's not anymore.
You're missing the entire point, Jane. So why was Christopher, what was his name?
Steele.
Yeah.
No, he's talking about the one who died in Libya.
Yeah, the ambassador Chris Stevens. Why was he killed? What did he know about the operations that were planned in Libya? Why was he killed? Why was he allowed to be killed? And why were those people allowed to be killed? It was something bigger than just four people.
I would answer it, but you're probably going to refute me, so I'll answer it anyway. And by the way, John is the leader of the show tonight because he contributed $60 to the show temporarily until I reimburse him. But my opinion is there were major American administrative executives who asked for extra protection in Libya. But both the State Department, Hillary's department, and the Department of Defense failed them. Neither one of those departments wanted four Americans to die, but it was a much dangerous region than people projected, and
no,
they were caught
in
a bad situation.
Okay.
I'm telling you my opinion.
Right.
You don't have to agree with
you're
it.
Right.
But
no,
it's
you're
just
right.
The Middle East, and people
right.
die there.
John,
you're right.
I'm pulling Wade in for extra
John,
protection.
Hey.
Wade's
John,
on the line.
John, was that quid pro quo? You're $60, quid pro quo.
Yes, we'll give it quid pro quo.
No, it means he's a faithful Christian to a faithful cause.
There's a bigger story, I think, behind all of that, and that is Syria never attacked the United States. Iraq never attacked the United States. Turkey never attacked the United States. The Kurds never attacked. There's no country of ISIS. There's no country of Al-Qaeda. You have to vote on who you're going to go to war against the country and go attack it. So this is the whole issue of endless wars. And the reason I gave that history is they've been doing this for 5,000 to 10,000 years. You think that Russia going in there is going to take over Syria or Turkey or any of these places? They can influence it. These countries are Muslim. They resist other governments. That's beyond politics. It's their religion. And if you want to get involved with this, but we'll stay there another 20,000 years. It'll never change. You'll have to kill every person and like the American Indians, and go over there and settle and have a bunch of babies and take over. That's not going to happen. So if you want your kids to go back in casket, coffin, then keep sending them over there. But that's just it's a bad game plan. There's no end game for this.
Good point, John. And by the way, Wade's on the line, you guys. And also, my question to you guys is, how over time, the last 20, 30 years, how has Turkey morphed, and do they really have much in common with the United States? And it's strange to me that they're a NATO ally still.
Nobody has anything in common with the United States anymore, and that includes France, England, Germany. None of them have anything in common with the United States anymore. That's the whole point
And who's ever ruffling in the background, please stop. Thank you. Go ahead, Ben.
Don, I'd like to kind of agree with you on that, but disagree with you a little bit, because I'd like to say that every disagreement that our country has is only like 50%, roughly. We have half of our country. Our country is basically split half and half. So a disagreement that our country would normally have, the other half is the opposite. So our country has
true.
A bigger problem within on we can't agree on anything. Look at Congress.
True. That's very true.
And that's what I was talking about when I said my introductory statement, is that we've got a moral conscience that we have to figure out. And this is going to be, at the start of the year, we're going to have to really figure out what America is.
I think people are working on that, but, still it's, people aren't just going to switch sides and give up their position easily.
Well, here's a question for everyone.
I don't know. Lindsey Graham is teetering on being as Ben would say, a 50% critic of Trump. Right now, Lindsey Graham is trying his best to figure out where he belongs. And a lot of other, you know, Mitt has already fallen off the other side of Trump wagon, and a lot of other Republicans that are with him in the House anyway are rethinking their strategy coming up in the when they get have to face their reelection.
Well, Lindsey has to backtrack because he was so involved with McCain in the Middle East and the war hawks. And so he's got to figure that safe place, because the more they expose and the more that comes out about this stuff, it puts bad light on him. But going back the other way, what candidate wants peace and want Americans back in the United States and taking care of our problems, like actually fixing our, you know, work with our budgets, our jobs, our borders, our economy, our you know, injustices? And which candidates just want to stay over there and keep the same old, you know, regime game, you know, the game of chess? Now, Tulsi Gabbard said, you know, hey, pull the troops too. And then Hillary Clinton says she's a Russian agent, and so is Jill Stein. Does anyone agree with that at all? It's the same story of Russia. What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, Ben, because that post, but now we're getting into a whole nother issue.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the question.
Oh, the question is, Trump is one candidate who's basically saying, I want us out of the Middle East, you know, out of the war. You know, we'll watch from a distance. We'll have our big guns ready. We'll monitor, but we're not going to fight people. We'll use money wars, tariff wars. Now, Tulsi Gabbard is basically Democrat left with, you know, anti-gun and the border. You know, forget the border, but she's very much pro the troops. Every other candidate, from what I can understand, wants the status quo. They want to stay in the same old war chess game, the American petrodollar. And in the middle of that mix, Hillary threw out the bomb. It's like, here's the same story that Tulsi Gabbard is a Russian asset, an asset, or an agent, and so is Jill Stein of the Green Party. And she says the Russians are going to use them to try to steal the election.
Well, I don't believe that feud. The feud between Tulsi Gabbard and Hillary Clinton, I don't believe that. I don't think it's real. I think Tulsi is using the feud. I think Hillary Clinton is actually using the feud to boost Tulsi for some reason. And if Hillary Clinton jumps in the race, it's going to be because of crimes that she's trying to snake her way out of. She's going to claim political targeting. But if you look at Tulsi's voting record, she's far, far left. And I don't understand how anybody that's a military veteran could have voted on things that she did. I don't believe it for a second that they're actually at each other's throats. I think they're in cahoots. And I don't believe for a second that everything is what it seems with Lindsey Graham either. Him and the president play golf together. I think this is just for show, and it's done its purpose. The Democrats are the warmongers now.
Yeah.
By the way, you guys, would you all like to do another show? Because this show ends in 10 minutes. So would you like to
we've
do another
got,
show at 10 p.m.?
First of all,
answer the question. I'm going to be like Ben. I'm going to chisel all you guys down to nothing. Yes or no? Who wants to do a show at 10 o'clock?
I have to get up early.
Wade,
a little bit.
Yeah,
sorry.
Wade has to get up early.
I have to get up early.
John, do you want to do another show at 10 o'clock?
I can do another show, yeah.
Okay, John says yes. Don says yes. How about you, Ben?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, so go ahead and talk. I'm done with this episode talking. Just, I liked your, what were you saying, Ben, about Tulsi Gabbard, that you think she's misrepresenting herself?
Yeah, I don't think that the feud is legitimate.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm kind of surprised she's still in the race. Do you know any major people backing her? Or have you looked into that?
Putin.
Funny.
Well, she's targeting a base right now. She's targeting purple voters that hate Hillary Clinton. And they hate Trump.
Okay.
She's trying to target them. And I think worst case scenario for the Democrats is that if she is going to back up what she's doing, she will split off at the last moment because they're going to shut her down. They're going to shut her out. Her numbers might have boosted a little bit for this little feud, but the establishment isn't probably going to pick her. So if she's really going to stand by her feud with Hillary Clinton, she's going to run as an independent and split the purple voters. And it's going to make Donald Trump win in a landslide.
By the way,
wow.
Did anyone hear anything about Mitch McConnell not approving of Trump's action withdrawing from Syria?
Haven't heard.
He's always been known to be the establishment speaker, so majority leader.
You mean Senate majority leader?
So what do you say,
yeah.
Wade? What do you
What's
say?
That? Yeah, I've heard a lot of people say that Tulsi is not quite as far left. I don't know if that's – it sounds like, yeah, that's kind of how she's trying to play it, like there's a more reasonable, electable, moderate Democrat. I hope she does break the vase. I'm not a big, you know, person cheering on Trump, but, you know, the Democrats are pretty awful right now, I think. I mean, I really don't agree with a lot of their positions, so –
Well, I think what the problem is there's six front runners and there's no one who has an upper hand.
Yeah.
But he's talking about the Clintons.
No, he's talking about all the front runners like Biden, Harris, and all those people. But he overall doesn't agree with their policies anyway, so it doesn't really matter who's running. He probably wouldn't agree with them.
I mean, I'm talking about the people that the race baiting, the trying to shut down speech, the, you know, wanting more higher taxes, more regulations, all of that. Socialism, I'm not for that. I think we need more independence, more individualism, more just treating people based on their character, and that's what I want to see.
I just want to read one sentence to you guys to sum it up. It says, Hillary Clinton emerged from a relative political obscurity last week to claim Gabbard, the candidate, was the favorite of the Russians, prepping for a third-party spoiler run during a podcast interview. She went so far to imply that the representative was a Russian asset. Gabbard fired back by calling Clinton the queen of warmongers, the embodiment of corruption, and the personification of the rot that has sickened the Democratic Party. I guess I missed the headline news last week.
So, do you want to hear a headline from Massachusetts where they actually are going after the First Amendment?
Sure.
So, Massachusetts Representative Daniel J. Hunt helped come up with a bill for hate speech, with a $150 maximum fine for the first offense, up to 6 months imprisonment, and a $200 fine or both if enacted. The word bitch would be part of that bill. If you call somebody a bitch, you could have to pay a $150 fine or
crazy.
Put in
and
prison
Lewis,
for six
and
months.
Lewis also today said that I would also include that word lynching, which the president used in the reverse context. So that would
it's
that
just a word.
But it's a word that would, but it brings a connotation that is extremely race baiting.
It's a word. You would put somebody in jail for using a word that offends you?
What if you're talking about history?
Absolutely, because the word
used to be lynching.
Absolutely. What about the First Amendment?
Because
the part where we have free speech, we can think wrong in this country.
Well,
we can think offensively. In order to think, you have to risk being offensive.
Don, that's a high-tech
right.
lynching, as Clarence Thomas would say.
Yeah, well, that's the bottom line, is that that word would be worse than bitch. And so we should...
under your own law that you would support, I've heard you say some things that would land your ass in jail on this show.
I'd be in jail, but I'd be in jail big time. And I'd have no problem. You know, we got this...
I think Albert was the culprit.
I think that we were talking... Albert would be in the cell next to me. But bottom line is that, we're talking about the fact that all these people should be in jail. I mean, Hillary, Bill, and every white man who's been in power should be in jail.
Doesn't make sense, man.
McConnell.
Doesn't make sense. Coming from the same guy, from the same side of the aisle that wants less people in prison, you would put people in jail for using a word. You know how many people would be in prisons? Jails?
No.
You would double it. You would triple it. You would multiply it by 1,000. Everyone would be in jail.
But there wouldn't be 43%. That would even the score, because just like lynching, you know, it would even the score if people were lynched today. Because the lynching went on, killed thousands of people, Nate Turner, and, you know, from Nate Turner all the way up through, who knows?
Can't believe you're entertaining this, Don.
Before we cut to our next show in three minutes, I have a question, you guys. Now, this is very controversial. Donald Trump was the first person to criticize members of his own party, like John McCain and Mark Rubio from Florida.
Trump is a Democrat.
Do you think Tulsi Gabbard had the right to use such offensive language towards Hillary Clinton, being that she's a former president's wife? And do you think in the future that candidates of the same party should refrain from criticizing other candidates?
No.
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Of course you're going to criticize.
I'm not talking about regular criticism. I'm talking about vilifying them.
Well,
that's what
I get vilified for being a white male. So why not?
All of her statements were true. And not only that, if you eliminate the B word, there wouldn't be any more black music, because all the rappers, I can tell you, I have friends that play it 24/7 at work when they're, you know, they're working away with their headsets on. And I can tell you that's the second biggest word after the N word. That's all they say. They wouldn't have any words to say. It would just be silence and drum beats.
And then we'd be listening to classical music all the time.
Well, then it would be we'd have our courts full of arguments about context. Our courts would be absolutely overwhelmed about speech context. If you told somebody they were acting like a B word instead of calling them directly a B word, like, what are we going to do? Like, how many lawyers do we have to have? How many judges do we have to have? How many courts are we going to have to build and jails? What are you talking about, Don? How could you support legislation like this?
The biggest word in black rapping is shorty.
As we know it.
And could you shorties call back in 15 minutes? We're about to cut off.
That would be the best thing for our court system and our legal system in the world, Ben. It'd be fantastic for us to be able to expand it, just because everybody's calling everybody a B word. More money, more money, more money.
You're just trolling, Don.
I'm going to open the next show with a rap.
I hope it's the B word.
She's got fur-lined boots and something.